Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Where are you coming from in this one?
Your 100% essential download.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
You let this get out of control.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon discuss Chelsea's 3-2 win over Newcastle at Stamford Bridge in the Premier League. Does Cole Palmer get on the plane to go to the Euros in the summer with England? What now for Eddie Howe? If the Magpies drop into the bottom half of the Premier League, will he still be in a job at St James's Park at the start of next season? And the Premier League faces more backlash after a number of clubs walked away from a deal to provide more money to the EFL. We'll get former Crystal Palace owner Simon Jordan's reaction to that ongoing story. This is Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
And that is going to be that, and Chelsea have got their victory. Well, it may not remove the pressure completely from Poch, but it will do his claims the power of good. Chelsea don't move in the table despite the fact that they've secured a victory inspired by Cole Palmer.
Cole Palmer, Simon, one positive note Chelsea can point to, I would have thought, in a season of struggle up until now.
Yeah. You know, ultimately he's a good player. Whether he'll make the Euros, I think, is debatable. But I think he has...
He should make the Euros.
I'm not sure that he will make...
13 goals, 11 assists.
I understand that, but I'm not sure that he'll make the European Championship squads. I don't think he's had quite the impact that will leverage him in there. But he can be part of the conversation. But I think, yeah, there's an argument that he has the potential to be a really significant player in a season where Chelsea have not been what people anticipated, certainly me. I think he's one of the few shining lights. And yeah. I would argue the case that if Manchester City had really wanted to have kept him, because people are saying that Chelsea have plucked him from Manchester City and that ultimately it was Cole Palmer not wanting to be patient like Phil Foden was, not wanting to bide his time like Jadon Sancho didn't want to bide his time at Manchester City. I think if Pep Guardiola had really wanted to keep Cole Palmer, because they're not under financial fair play, any kind of governance from that point of view, I think they sold him because they perhaps didn't think he was right for Manchester City. Now, at this stage in Chelsea's transition, because they've got so few shining lights, then Cole Palmer will shine through.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I'd like him to go. I like the boy. I think he's done ever so well there.
He's done well, yeah.
And is he a shining light? I think he would thoroughly deserve his opportunity should he get to Germany. And if he does, we'll see him out there. What about Eddie Howe and Newcastle, though, Simon? Where are Newcastle now? They're 10th, 1 point above Chelsea in 11th. Chelsea have a game in hand, an FA Cup quarter final at Manchester City to come for Newcastle United this weekend. If they go out at that, and you have to think they probably might, What is left for them? I mean, when you look at Eddie, does he get more of a free pass than the likes of Pochettino and Ten Hag, as I said in the introduction to the show this morning?
No, not really, because ultimately Chelsea and Man United have been clubs that have achieved something in the last 20 years. Man United are arguably the poster boys for the Premier League, or were for a significant period, and are now being eclipsed by Man City. Chelsea were one of the factors that changed the face of English football with Roman Abramovich's money. They've won Premier Leagues and European Cups, Champions League Cup tournaments. Newcastle have done nothing. and are a club that's been bought at a time when governance is becoming more prevalent, so they can't flex their muscles the way that other clubs have been able to. So I think comparing the pressures on Ten Hag and an elite football club like Manchester United, comparing the pressures on Pochettino with £1 billion spend behind him in the recent seasons, and also the achievements of Chelsea, is not the same as comparing it to Newcastle with the expectation level of an awful owner that they want consigned to the history. That's their view, not mine. And ultimately, a club that's building towards something. I don't think
the expectation levels have changed at Newcastle United, Simon.
But that's what
is
we say.
Is he scrutinised as much because he's an English manager?
But that's what we say.
And he's popular and he's likable. Is he scrutinised in the way he should be?
But I argue with the characterisation. Where have expectation levels arisen? Have the expectation levels arisen amongst the fans? I know we've had Amanda Staveley come out and suggest that Newcastle are going to win this, that and the other.
Yeah.
Well, she says a lot of things, and we'll see how that pans out.
Yeah.
But the point is that we saw sections of the media scrutinising Eddie Howe on the back of a significant drop of form after the Champions League run, and we will see what the ownership model does at the end of the season. I wouldn't be surprised, and I've maintained the view, that Eddie Howe won't get you to the promised land. So actually, he is getting more scrutiny from people like me because I'm saying he doesn't even get a passage of time to build towards that. Eventually, Eddie Howe is going to be replaced. That's a kind of unkind look at it, isn't it?
Unkind on whose part?
My part, because I'm basically saying that Eddie Howe...
I think you're being realistic about it.
I think I'm being realistic, but certain people would characterise it as unkind and suggest that ultimately you should enjoy the journey and not worry about the destination.
You see, there's Ryan, who's a regular contributor to the show. Guys, good morning. Eddie Howe does get a free pass, just like every other English manager and player. The football media in this country has put aside their British bias for people to start taking them seriously again.
So tell that to Steve Cooper. When he was in a job for 5 minutes, got the team promoted to the Premier League, and within 5 minutes, the media are pouring over the fact that he's likely to be fired. His owner came out and gave him a new contract. And eventually, Steve Cooper got fired. I think managers get judged by their performances and the climate and the dynamics of the club. Arteta being a case in point. There's a change of direction in the ownership model, a change in perspective. Post the European Super League, Arteta got a very different ownership model than was there previously.
I'm going to put something very heavy to you on Eddie, the other side of this. This was Eddie post-match after that 3-2 defeat at Stamford Bridge last night.
It's difficult to draw too many conclusions from one result. I think that, you know, our form over a long period of time hasn't been what we want it to be. It hasn't been as consistent as it needs to be to get into European competition. I feel our form is gradually coming back, but, and there is a but, we're still hurting ourselves by not being complete in our performance today. We're inconsistent even within that game. There were some really good bits, there were some not so good bits, and I think that's the frustration for everybody, because we know we're close, but we still have a gap to where we were consistently last season.
Anton Portsmouth is a bit confused about Eddie. Simon, Jim, I'm still not sure if this is the longest honeymoon period ever or if he's still the second coming of a god. You see, the thing is this, Simon, and I hope they don't, but let's say Newcastle United go out to City this weekend in the FA Cup. Let's say Newcastle hover around 10th or 11th come May, and that's as good as it gets for them this season. Is Eddie gone?
I think there's a challenge for him there, because it depends upon the rational approach of their owner and who they've put in place. The guy from the PIF fund that apparently doesn't work for the PIF fund yet in America, he's been denounced, he's been announced as being part of the PIF fund, because ultimately the PIF fund has got nothing to do with the government, but we'll discuss that in a different perspective, I should imagine, at some different time. But the point is that Eddie Howe, when you're comparing Eddie Howe to what other clubs have done, Arteta's been in situ for 4 years at Arsenal. He's won nothing besides an FA Cup in his first season, okay? And he's been given significantly more money, came from a position of a more established football club with a better base than the one that Eddie Howe has had. So I think there's an inherent unfairness in...
Yeah, but Arteta finished 8th, 5th, 2nd.
Yeah, but Arsenal are a bigger football club with more heritage, more legacy and a better base than Newcastle. Newcastle have come from a position where the owner has not wanted to invest in the football club in any significant level, and his ambitions were predominantly to stay in the Premier League. Now that dial has turned. So Eddie Howe in 2 years has turned it from a relegation-avoiding football club to a top-end competing football club with one season of perhaps punching above their weight, where they caught a wave and they performed brilliantly and were very unlucky in the Champions League this season.
So answer my question, does Eddie take them into next season?
I don't know the owners enough to be able to determine whether they think that he's moving in the right direction or whether they think they're regressing. Questions could be asked. One of the things I talked about was Eddie Howe's inability at times to produce teams that can defend. And the thing that happened with Bournemouth in the end was once their forwards stopped scoring goals, their defence leaked and they got relegated. I'm not suggesting Newcastle are going to get relegated, but we are seeing Newcastle concede a lot more goals this season than in previous seasons.
Right.
So maybe levels are coming. But I don't think he avoids scrutiny. I think Newcastle are a different animal to Chelsea, a different animal to Manchester United, a different animal to Arsenal. And if at the end of next season, Eddie, I think he merits another opportunity to continue the building. I think Newcastle will finish inside the top 10. They might finish ninth or eighth, but I think they'll finish inside the top 10.
Okay.
That's not success compared to what they had the previous season, but it's a degree of stability, and if they can launch off that, buy better players and continue their progress, then I think he's worthy of another season. But I still maintain the same view that if the ultimate aim, if Amanda Staveley wants to open her mouth and tell people that the football club is going to win everything, then she needs to describe how they're going to do that.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to do it spending £150 million every season.
Yeah.
When your competition is spending £250 million and already better than you because they've got better bases.
There's a great message for a friend of mine who's a Newcastle fan. Eddie ultimately overachieved last season and is now being held to those overachieving standards. They may be the richest club in the world, but he's not been able to spend the money like other clubs have done.
Yeah.
Two very good points here.
Yeah, the club's not the richest club in the world. The owners are. And given the governance that's around football, they can only spend a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
And so with that in mind, they're going to have to be prepared to accept that there's going to be an element of this will take a longer period of time to build something, given the nature of the rules have changed since Chelsea and Man. It changed. Chelsea changed it. It changed for Man City. They had disadvantages that Chelsea didn't have. And it's changed again for Newcastle.
Yeah.
So you have to accept that you're going to build. Now, if the ownership model, the only people that we don't know what they think of it, we know that certain sections of the media suggest that Eddie Howe's getting a pass. Hmm. We know that potentially whenever we bring this subject up, Newcastle fans come in and say, no, we're comfortable with Eddie Howe, leave him alone.
Right.
We don't know what the state of mind of the owners is. They didn't buy a football club to be part of the Premier League. My expectation is they bought a football club to be at the top of the league. So it depends upon how they view it rather than ultimately we view it. I know that's stating the bleeding obvious.
No, that's a good point. I think it's a relevant point. They want to eat at Europe's top table. That's what they want to do. Steve's a Newcastle fan saying exactly what you've just said. Great show, guys, but you guys need to get real. Total poppycock. Eddie's job is completely safe. He did a brilliant job last season. That's last season. That's last season, I emphasise, though, Steve. I'll put it out there this morning. Is scrutiny lighter on English managers? Do we scrutinise them as close as we do foreign managers here in the English game? Eddie included in that question. You can let me know on that. Is there a Newcastle fan out there this morning listening who would say, I'm not so sure if Eddie's the man?
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Sean is a Newcastle fan, so nobody more appropriate to kick this off with this morning. Sean, good morning to you. What's your take on it with Eddie?
Hello, mate. All right, thanks for having us on the show. Nice show. I listen to you every day.
Thanks, Sean.
I think Eddie's done all he can do, to be honest. I don't think the players want to play for him. I mean, you've got Tory boys like Sean Longstaff and Dan Byrne, which were nowhere to be seen last night, to be fair. Also, can I ask a question to Simon? Simon, do you think they get late kickoff under the lights as a more advantage to the home team?
That's a question for you.
I don't know.
Do you think it is, Sean?
I don't think so particularly.
Personally, I think when you've got a Monday night kickoff like last night, the home fans all for it under the lights and things like that. But he has a good staff for his lads. Newcastle's away games this season in the Premier League, out of 14 games, only one game has been at 3 p.m. on a Saturday.
That's interesting. That's interesting, Sean.
That's a bit unfair on the Newcastle fans, to be fair. I mean, as you know, we travel around the country up and down in with numbers. But to go away to London at like 4:30, 8 o'clock kickoffs is a bit of a disgrace, to be fair.
Well, that's the broadcasting schedules, and that's one of the attractions of you being such an attractive side at times, that you feature in the minds of broadcasters. So if you've been playing more games that have been under floodlights or at certain times, it's because the broadcast schedules have determined that they want to watch Newcastle. So it's that you're victims of your own success to some extent in terms of the way that you play.
Where do you stand on Eddie, Sean, just before you go on Eddie?
To be fair, I love him. He's the best manager we've had since Robson and Keegan, and I kind of fall for what he's done, but I just think it's that time now where I just don't think they want to play for him anymore. That's just the way it comes across. They just look flat.
I don't see it like that, Sean. I still think they want to play for him big time, but the question is, what might they achieve next season? Sean, thanks for the call. Dan's a big Manchester United fan. Dan, before I get to you, we're putting it out there this morning. Is scrutiny lighter on English managers as opposed to foreign managers? Do they get more of a free pass, the likes of Eddie, than the likes of Pochettino and Ten Hag? There's a message coming in. Greg is a Spurs fan. That is a ridiculous assertion. The reverse is true. English managers aren't even given opportunities. Will Gary O'Neill ever be given a top six job?
Depends if he merits it. Okay. I mean, the problem with the Premier League is that, well, it's not the problem. It's a globalised marketplace. I mean, when we have conversations about the lack of representation of ethnicity or the lack of representation of geography in terms of English managers, it's also because you're taking the talent from around the world. Six managers in the Premier League are from the British Isles. 33% of the Premier League has British managers, which I think is a relatively high statistic given the fact in previous years it's dropped. I don't think that's true. I think if they're good enough, Graham Potter got given an opportunity. He couldn't do it. So this argument that people don't get given an opportunity is not true. Mm. Brendan Rodgers is from these Isles. He got the opportunity to manage Liverpool, which was a legacy football club. People have been given opportunities. Tim Sherwood was given the opportunity at Aston Villa and at Tottenham Hotspur. Ask yourself the reasons why English managers don't get the opportunities, or more to the point, don't do the jobs.
Dan, United fan, where do you stand on this? Good morning.
Morning. Yes, I think it is a case of, you've got an English manager, perfect example is Eddie Howe. Did a great job at Bournemouth. Probably got Newcastle ahead of the curve last year and got them to a point where maybe 2-3 years down the line he was expecting to be in the Champions League. He did it in year two, essentially. And they've had a tough one this year with injuries. And last night they were playing Chelsea away. Like, Chelsea are a great side. Yeah, they're struggling a bit themselves, but it's not like they're going to Burnley away again. They've gone to Chelsea and in some ways give them a good game. I don't understand why he's even under any pressure at all. He deserves all the time in the world to wait till he's got his players back, go into the transfer market again next year and put it right and do what he's proved he can do already.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, do you agree with this Newcastle fan? Mark the Geordie, he calls himself. I'm ashamed with that fellow, former caller there, Sean, saying it was maybe time up for Eddie because the players aren't playing, but the players would die for Eddie Howe on the pitch. His hands are tied with spending and the squad is quite average. Do you think the Newcastle squad's quite average, Dan?
No, I won't say it's average, but I think it's been depleted with injuries.
Yeah.
When he's got his best players on the field, they do well. Like, they beat us this year. They've given some good team, good games. I remember a game against Liverpool at the start of the year. They were brilliant. It's not like they're underperforming when they've got all the players out there. They just can't get the players on the field, and sometimes that's how Eddie Howe's handling it.
Yeah. Dan, briefly, do you think Ten Hag is over-scrutinised?
No, but I think the position of Man United manager, regardless of who you are, is always going to be scrutinised. But I think Ten Hag's, been given the right amount of time and should continue to be definitely to the end of the year at least. And, start next season, if we're struggling, then maybe it's time to look at him. But I think he's got another 6 months or so yet.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Simon, it would seem that we've had another holding statement from the Premier League regarding providing funds which would dribble down into the pyramid, and all the other clubs around the UK would benefit from that money. Mm-hmm. And the Premier League, great and the good of the Premier League, met here in London yesterday to discuss that. How much are we going to give the other clubs? How much should we give the other clubs? When should we give it? And then we got the Premier League statement. Premier League clubs reconfirmed their commitment to securing a sustainably funded financial agreement with the EFL, subject to the new financial system being formally approved by the clubs. The league and the clubs also reaffirmed their ongoing and long-standing commitment to the wider game, which includes £1.6 billion distributed to all levels of funding across the current three-year cycle. The Premier League's significant funding contributions cover all EFL clubs and National League clubs, as well as women and girls football and the grassroots of the game. So the intention appears still to be there, but when are they going to release the money? That's a big question. Is it another holding statement from the Premier League? So I put that this morning to one of the co-owners of an EFL club, Charlton Athletic's co-owner, Charlie Methven. And I said, this latest Premier League holding statement, what did it look like to him?
Well, there are all sorts of things in life that I, in theory, have a commitment to, but find difficult to put into practice for all sorts of different reasons. And the reality is that this is just a bunch of jargon words to paper over the fact that they haven't done what they said they would do. They told the EFL that they would come back with a comprehensive offer that sorted out the problems, outlined the white paper. They told the government they would come back with a deal that would be appropriate for the problems that the government have outlined themselves, and they failed to do so. So having failed to do so, their communications department has been put into action to try and come up with a form of word that somehow pulled the wool over enough people's eyes to kick the can down the road a little bit further and allow those clubs who are holding out against this to live and breathe for another day. Because let's be quite clear, a majority of Premier League clubs are fully realistic about this and know that this deal has to be done. It's a minority of clubs who are holding out against it and who are holding the entire industry back. And everyone knows who leads those clubs. Two clubs not too far from Charlton, let's say, one a little bit to the north and one a little bit to the southwest. And they have got, at the moment, just enough other clubs on their side to stop the industry from being able to move forward.
It's suggested that some Premier League clubs feel that the EFL needs to get its own house in order before they dish out any money. Can you understand that viewpoint?
No.
Simple as that.
No. I mean, look, I mean, the situation is quite clear. It is always understood by the Football League that any kind of deal would come with some strings attached, included the Championship probably having to subscribe to a different cost control scheme. That was always absolutely understood. And I think it was understood by the EFL that we would have to swallow a few pills in order to get the deal done. Indeed, there was a deal presented to us by the Premier League back in September, which we voted to accept, which included the fact that we would have to ascribe to a new cost control scheme. So that's absolute baloney. Let's just face it for what it is. There's a small number of Premier League clubs who are holding the entire industry back, who are driving the Secretary of State mad, who are driving the rest of the industry mad, because all they're thinking about is their own short-term narrow self-interest. And frankly, everything else is just noise.
Charlie, this small number of Premier League clubs, come on then, name me a few.
It's on record that West Ham and Palace are the leaders of this movement, this King Canute-style movement to try and prevent the industry moving forward. It's not yet a matter of public record as to which other clubs they've persuaded to join them in their corner. But, you know, if you speak to executives from the bigger clubs in the Premier League, they're almost as frustrated as we are by this. They know, because they see a bigger strategic vision about what's really going to happen with the new government regulator. They know that this is just pushing against the tide and driving everyone crazy. And it's probably more likely to end up with a scenario that they all dread, which is a comprehensive reformation of the parachute payment system, which is something which really would make a big difference to these guys. But let's not allow some flaky, whitewashy PR statement to pull the wool over our eyes. I think your listeners will be able to smell that for what it is.
Some of those Premier League clubs, though, might look at a club like Reading in financial meltdown and say, why should we prop them up?
Let's look at various clubs in financial meltdown. We have, the Premier League is not without its clubs in financial meltdown. If you look at the current finances of Everton Football Club, they would be considerably worse than Reading. And this is exactly the point. This is why the government has decided to enact a regulator, is because the industry has proven itself unable to regulate itself. And what's happening at Everton and what's happening at Reading is an absolute tragedy. But it is what it is. It was entirely expected. We all knew that there probably weren't the necessary clubs in the Premier League to vote this through yesterday. So everyone has to carry on through this sad and sorry rigmarole, the government, the EFL clubs, the other Premier League clubs, because of this very small number of recidivist clubs who, as I said, are acting entirely out of their own self-interest. It's entirely normal, by the way, for clubs to bear their self-interest fairly closely in mind, but it's somewhat disappointing when clubs decide to act entirely in their own self-interest.
Charlie, you've said quite bluntly, no, you don't believe there's any appetite in real terms from the Premier League's point of view of making this deal happen. Are you ever going to be on the receiving end of Premier League money?
It's not a question of Premier League money, the TV revenues that are produced by the English football system, because let's be totally honest about it, Jim. You know, there are many years, for instance, when the championship battle at the top of the Premier League is sometimes not all that competitive, and when the most interesting battle in terms of TV viewing numbers is the relegation battle. And you can't have a relegation battle without a league below it to relegate to. So the pyramid is absolutely crucial. If you look at the players who play in the Premier League, and particularly the players who play in the England team, a majority of them have come through English Football League clubs' academies. The pyramid is the pyramid. It's an entire ecosystem, and it's the ecosystem as a whole that produces revenues, and those revenues have to be shared in an equitable way. So as I said, if you look up and down the 92 clubs, there are 10 or 11 clubs in the Premier League who are on board with that concept, and there are 72 clubs in the Football League who are on board with that concept. So you're talking about 83 clubs out of 92 who are pretty clear on what that future should look like. And then there's a small number of Premier League clubs who've decided that they're going to be the rebels who are going to prevent the whole industry moving forward. And I just think that disappointing, but unfortunately entirely to be expected.
Charlie, what's your one sentence message to those Premier League rebels this morning?
I'd say just ask them to grow up and remember that these clubs, the clubs that they run, were very recently Football League club members. And the fact that in the game of musical chairs, they're currently sat in the seats where they're currently sat, doesn't mean that at some point their clubs won't be back in the Football League and in a position where an equitable distribution of English football's total revenues would actually be an extremely welcome thing to them.
That was Charlie Methven, co-owner of Charlton Athletic, making a number of points here. Simon, not least that some of these Premier League people better realise, Premier League club officials better realise, they could end up in the EFL very soon. So the shoe will be in the other foot, and they'll be looking for money from the Premier League as well. So he made a number of good points. As a senior official at the EFL tells me this morning, we'll just discuss the next steps to take with the Premier League and the government. I'm not sure there's going to be any dramatic announcements.
Yeah, it's a horse trade. I mean, ultimately, it's
but it's the longest horse trade ever.
Well, so it would be, because it's a negotiation where the Premier League don't want to give the EFL any money. Why would they?
Why shouldn't they?
But okay, well,
they've got it to give.
Okay, well, yes. Okay, so these Premier League clubs that are spending inordinate amounts of money on players that are generating the wealth. I understand a lot of the argument. I would be making some of the argument.
You've got to concede that Charlie spoke very well there and made some good points.
Well, I think he makes it very simplistic. First of all, he names two clubs, West Ham and Palace, where it requires seven clubs to be able to block an agenda. So that means...
Well, there's two. I'm sure he could have gone on.
That means, well, he clearly doesn't know. And also, beyond that, what was the quantum that Charlie wants? Well, how much does he want the English? You've got a one-hit deal here. And the only reason you've got this deal is because you've got the threat of an independent regulator. And if anybody believes, anybody in a sound mind believes that a regulator and over-regulating a game and introducing governance so it strangles the life out of the game is a good thing, then they're a bloody fool, right? And they'll find out what that looks like in the longer run. But what it does give you is it does give you leverage. And leverage is about bringing the Premier League to the table. We all know that the distributions are incorrect. We all know that 91% of the broadcast revenue in this country goes to 20 clubs and 9% goes to 72 clubs. And the reason for that in part is because of small-minded thinking in the EFL from smaller clubs further down the pyramid in League Ones and League Twos where Charlton currently deservedly reside. And have blocked certain thinking about the way that EFL needed to combat the Premier League over the last 30 years. You now have some grown-up thinking in Rick Parry and Trevor Birch, which have negotiated far better broadcast deals with Sky. So they've increased the Sky deal for the EFL. They've increased the overseas deal because of Ryan Reynolds, as you told me the other day. Right? And now they're negotiating to get two things done. To recalibrate the parachute payments, despite Rick being an architect of the parachute payments initially, to recalibrate them because of the skew that they have on the wages inside the championship. And then they're trying to renegotiate the overall distributions. They're going to get a one-hit deal. So I think people like Charlie Methven, that have profited out of opportunities with Sunderland without giving a lot of value to the football club, should wind their necks in a little bit.
No, but if you were Charlie, you'd be saying the same thing as a co-owner of Charlton.
Which I would never be.
If I were
in a position of influence inside a football club now, and I knew when I was at Palace, we did not have competent leaders inside the EFL. We didn't have competent leaders. Keith Harris was a buffoon, and so was the other fella that led the Football League into a dreadful deal with the ITV Digital.
Well, Orville.
Yeah, well, Orville would have been more effective. But ultimately, Brian Mulwinnie was more effective as an EFL chairman, and we've seen it repeat. Now, I know that with Parry and Trevor Birch, you've got two guys that can deliver an outcome, right? And the problem is you've got 72 football clubs from the bottom of League Two to the top of the Championship that are very different. It's a very difficult organisation to manage. The Premier League, if you were in the Premier League, you would have no ambition to give the EFL more money. And the only reason you will do that is because you're being leveraged into it by the threat of an independent regulator. And you will do it at the last possible moment that you have to, because all they're doing is a horse trade to be able to negate the impact of an independent regulator. That's all they're doing.
But Simon, in simplistic terms then, if you think Charlie's interview with me was simplistic, this is even more simplistic.
How much do they want? In
principle, the EFL clubs are due
money from the Premier League
because the Premier League, as we know, is awash with money.
No, the EFL,
and I'll put this to you as well.
They're not
the Premier League shareholders meeting yesterday. All the big hitters were there: Bowley, Levy, Parrish, Brady, Egbali, Amanda Staveley.
Yeah,
is that holding statement from the Premier League good enough?
It's a commercial negotiation. It is what it is, and the bottom line is they're not due. I was in, you know, during my time of owning Palace, we spent more time in the EFL than we did in the Premier League. And I spent more time campaigning for competent leadership to be able to negotiate deals with no leverage. They've got leverage now. So what you want to do is allow Parry and Birch to negotiate a deal where they can get as much money out of the Premier League as they can. And if it takes a period of time to get that, if it takes all the way up to the court steps, and by the court steps I mean the day the independent regulator gets the white paper dropped into legislation, then that's what it takes. Because what you don't do is you don't give small-minded people an opportunity to take 180 million from the Premier League or 200 million quid a season. You want to get them to get to 400. You want to get them to get as high as you possibly can. If that means you play the game of turning the screw, using government, using the threat, playing brinkmanship, walk up to the court steps yourself, and you, because this is the one time that the EFL has got an opportunity to get some proper distribution. So you don't pee it away for small-minded opportunities.
You're just saying be patient.
You've got to wait.
But they've been very
because
patient.
Because when the solidarity...
But the rich should help the poor here.
No. What, we live in a socialist world, do we? In an idealistic world, yes, everyone's equal and everyone gets the same amount of money. The only reason there was $3.5 billion in the Premier League, primarily, realistically and pragmatically, is because of the eliteness of the league. Now, there's a contributing factor. And I've always made this point that 14% of the Premier League's product comes from the Championship. Three go down, three go up, right? So I get the value of it, but you need to negotiate properly. Because when we had this ridiculous conversation with Christian Perslow when he came in the other day, two years ago during COVID, saying, oh, we helped out the EFL by arranging a loan for them. Oh, sod off, Christian. Arranging a loan is not helping somebody. It's just getting them a loan. If you wanted to help the EFL, you should have given them some money. But you need proper... Okay. Grown-up thinking, not this ridiculous grow up to the Premier League.
So
it's
the
silly.
EFL clubs,
it's silly.
Still hanging around waiting for the Premier League clubs to give them money. It's going to be a wait yet. He's in the mood this morning.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review, whatever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.